Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
This was not a transparent process. This was within the span of, 48 hours?
Lawmakers considered denying themselves pay raises after a convoluted process recommended a significant bump in compensation. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, months-long delays for Medicaid application approvals are causing some Alaskans to forego needed health care.
We send documentation in for the patients, doing a lot of support around that, because for some people, treatment can be life or death.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Alaska House Speaker Kathy Tilton called for a vote yesterday to reject salary increases for the legislature, governor, and state commissioners. This comes after a tumultuous month for the commission that makes salary recommendations for elected officials. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
It's been more than 10 years since the governor or the legislature have had a pay raise. The latest plan would bump the governor's pay up about 20% to $176,000 per year. Legislators would get a 67% raise to $84,000 per year. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, said at a news conference that her majority caucus was concerned about the process that produced the pay raises.
People have different opinions on what this should look like, but at this point, I think that conversation needs to continue a little bit more.
Salary recommendations are typically made by a 5-member state commission appointed by the governor. Earlier this month, all 5 members resigned or were fired after producing a recommendation report that included raises for the governor, lieutenant governor, and state commissioners, but not for the legislature. A new commission was appointed almost immediately, which amended the report to include a pay raise for legislators. Proponents of the legislative pay raise say it ensures diversity in the body. Larry Persily was one of the members of the original commission who was fired last week. He says the commission shuffling is not how government is supposed to work.
This was not a transparent process. This was within the span of, 48 hours? You get rid of a board, just happen to have 5 bystanders who you're going to name, and magically they all agree to vote the same way on something that there's no backup, no discussion. I'm okay with a legislative pay raise. I would have voted for one, but this is not the way to do it.
Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, said Tuesday that the legislative pay raise was a long time coming. He did not indicate whether he would support Tilton's call to reject the new salary recommendations.
We're concerned. We're listening about that. We're listening to what they're saying. We haven't made any firm decision on what our plans are exactly.
In a press conference Tuesday, Governor Mike Dunleavy defended the decision to replace compensation commissioners.
I know that some want to believe there's some nefarious or dark reason why the members of the commission were removed. But again, as I explained earlier, all statute, constitution, regs, you name it, were followed, have been followed, will be followed.
The governor said the decision to accept or reject the new salary recommendations is in the hands of the legislature. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A warning before this next story. It involves violence and may be disturbing for some listeners. 2 Klawak men are facing second-degree murder charges after allegedly beating an 80-year-old man to death early Tuesday morning. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, investigators believe the killing was motivated by rumors circulated on Facebook.
Alaska State Troopers found Lincoln Bingo Paradovich dead in his Klawak trailer home early Tuesday morning. According to Adam Hawkins with the Alaska Bureau of Investigation, 21-year-old Blaze Andrew Diltz and 22-year-old Moses Scott Blanchard allegedly beat the 80-year-old man to death with their hands, feet, and heavy household objects. During an interrogation, Diltz and Blanchard reportedly told investigators that they had seen a post on Facebook alleging that Paradovich had catcalled an underage girl and pursued her with an axe the day before. Diltz told investigators he did not know if the allegations were true. According to court documents, state troopers investigated the allegation that Paradovich chased the young girl with an axe on Monday and found that, quote, no crime had occurred. The beating allegedly happened in the early morning hours on Tuesday. Around 1:30 a.m., the two suspects, along with a minor boy and a minor girl, were walking on a trail near Paradovich's trailer home. The girl said she told the group she was scared to walk past Paradovich's house because of the rumors. She says that Blanchard and Diltz told her not to worry because they were with her. That's when investigators say Diltz punched in a window of the trailer and kicked in the door. Diltz, Blanchard, and the boy walked in and saw Paradovich sleeping on a mattress on the floor. Then, all three allegedly started stomping on the man and beating him with their fists and heavy objects. Firewood, a cannonball-shaped 15-pound weight, a chair, and a milk crate. In an interview, Blanchard reportedly told police that the minor boy's involvement was, quote, minimal. The alleged assailants fled after a passing car started honking in an attempt to draw attention to the scene. Troopers had arrived at about 3 a.m., roughly 90 minutes after the assault was reported. Klawak's police department has been unstaffed since the death of the former chief in January. Both suspects reportedly told police they did not call for medical help for Paradovich. Blanchard and Diltz are both facing second-degree murder and manslaughter charges and a second-degree burglary charge. They remain in custody at the Craig Jail with a bail set at $600,000. An Alaska State Trooper spokesperson declined to say whether anyone else could face charges in connection to Paradovich's death. The investigation is ongoing. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Bering Strait Native Corporation is providing 100 cases of drinking water to the village of Koyuk after a recent freeze affected homes and other buildings. Laverne Kamoktwak is the tribal coordinator for the native village of Koyuk. She says due to older infrastructure, many of the homes in the village are without drinking water.
We've been without water for about maybe 5 weeks, and the shortage of water, just the hustle and bustle to try to get compatible drinking water to the homes has been a struggle for most.
The failure of water service, Kamoktwak says, was due to freezing conditions and the general age of the system. The problem, she says, started in one part of town and then developed in others.
The water froze on the west loop of town, and it just kind of continued within each home. We couldn't get water pumped through the water system.
Kamoktwak added that the community has a washateria, but it is hardly used because of its antiquated condition. It was built in the 1980s, and the building structure is now failing. Kamoktwak says she will be handing out more water to Koyuk residents as soon as it arrives.
The people will be very happy. We've already received 340 cases of water from Koyuk, and I've distributed 4 cases to each home on the east loop, on the west loop, and we will be doing east loop distribution 1 case at a time until we get more water in.
According to Bering Strait Native Corporation, Alaska Airlines is donating half of the cost of the freight to the village. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka students are learning to sing David Bowie harmonies as part of an artist-in-residence program.
What is the most, why do we sing? Why do we sing?
Singing expresses the stuff that words can.
Good!
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Local healthcare providers in Homer and Nanilchik report patients are facing months-long delays in new Medicaid application approvals. The delays in providing access to the government healthcare program are part of an ongoing state backlog at the Division of Public Assistance in processing benefit applications. As KBBI's Sean McDermott reports, the agency is aware of the problem and recently hired new employees and contractors to try to alleviate these issues. But in the meantime, long wait times for Medicaid applicants are preventing people from getting the health care they need.
Here in Homer, Monica Anderson is a patient benefits coordinator at Soldovia Village Tribes Health and Wellness Center. She has patients who applied for SNAP, Medicaid, and senior benefits back in September and are still waiting to hear from the Division of Public Assistance.
My hands are tied. I have to call the virtual call center as well. So I don't have like a fancy phone, a friend, direct contact.
When she makes calls on behalf of these patients, it can often take hours.
It's having to go through or sometimes getting bounced from the person who takes the call. Oh, and then we get in another queue to talk to an eligibility technician. And there's no like same day resolution. We're really not getting any answers.
The local DPA office in Homer closed during the COVID-19 pandemic. Anderson says that meant everyone had to go through the virtual call center, which has been understaffed since the Dunleavy administration cut 100 positions from the division in 2021. As a community health center, SVT offers treatment on a sliding pay scale. But when patients waiting for Medicaid approval need referrals to outside specialists, they have to pay out of pocket.
They're holding off seeking medical attention that the provider might feel is urgent, but they feel like they can't afford the travel to Anchorage or afford the office visit, not knowing how much longer their application might be pending.
According to the Department of Health, over 260,000 Alaskans receive Medicaid. That's more than one in three Alaskans. But the Division of Public Assistance says many new applicants simultaneously apply for other benefits, creating duplicate forms that need to be processed individually. This means the state doesn't have an accurate sense of how many Alaskans are facing delays in getting their medical benefits. Dorotha Ferrero is a spokesperson for South Peninsula Hospital in Homer and estimates they've had at least 60 to 70 patients in the past 6 months who have struggled to get Medicaid coverage. Despite the delays, the hospital is able to offer those patients care through something called presumptive eligibility, or temporary coverage for patients who meet the criteria for Medicaid before their applications are approved.
But it's only through the end of that month and the following month. And so if you've already done the temporary coverage and that window closed for you, but Medicaid has not approved you officially for Medicaid care, Medicaid coverage, you're uninsured again.
For new Medicaid applicants, Ferrero says the hospital has seen delays of 6 months or more for the Division of Public Assistance to process applications.
And that's too long, right, for somebody who is seeking health care, because usually when somebody's seeking health care and they qualify for Medicaid, things aren't going well for them.
Annette Hubbard, a case manager for opiate use disorder services at Nanilchik Community Clinic, says these Medicaid wait times are keeping patients from accessing essential care, even for requests for urgent and emergency coverage.
They've called Medicaid multiple times. We've called Medicaid multiple times. We have sent in emergency letters to see about getting Medicaid to cover their visits or their medications. We've sent documentation in for the patients, doing a lot of support around that, because for some people, treatment can be life or death.
Even when people do get approved for Medicaid, while they can be reimbursed for doctor's visits, Hubbard says, in her experience, that isn't true of medications.
Some of these medications that people are on that are life-saving, life-altering, help get them stable, they cost anywhere from $100 a week to $2,000 a month.
In spite of all of her outreach to the Division of Public Assistance, Hubbard says it doesn't feel like patients' applications are moving any faster.
It still feels like it's a brick wall.
To complicate things further, many Alaskans who receive Medicaid will soon have to recertify their coverage for the first time since the COVID-19 pandemic began, adding to the number of applications the state will need to process. In Homer, I'm Sean McDermott.
The Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery will go on two-hour notice tomorrow morning. That means at any time after that, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game can announce a fishery opening within 2 hours' warning. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game on Monday conducted aerial surveys of Sitka Sound from Cape Buranoff to St. Lazaria Island. A press release from the department stated no spawn or herring schools were observed during their flights. two test sets were conducted from department and industry vessels to assess the maturity of the fish. The fishery targets the herring's eggs, known as roe, which are sold internationally. Last year, the guideline harvest level for the fishery was 45,000 tons, but fishermen only caught about 25,000. That was still the highest harvest on record. The guideline harvest level for this year's fishery is set at 30,000 tons. The fishery and its management have been under scrutiny for years. In 2018, the Sitka Tribe of Alaska sued the state over management of the fishery. That case was settled in 2021, but in December of last year, attorneys for STA called for a reversal of the Superior Court's ruling before the Alaska Supreme Court. The court is expected to issue a written decision on the tribe's appeal sometime this year. In contrast, there will be no commercial Togiak sacro herring fishery this spring. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the market for the roe has dwindled for decades, making the remote fishery financially unfeasible.
Fish processors have indicated they will not buy Togiak herring this season, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Outlook, released on Monday. It's the first time there hasn't been a commercial fishery there in decades. That means over 57,000 tons of herring will go unharvested. Alaska's herring fisheries primarily target spawning fish to harvest sac roe, the eggs in the skein of the females. And Togiak's herring fishery was a big business in the late 1980s and early 90s. Japan is Alaska's main market for herring roe, and processors sold it to customers there at over $1,000 a ton. But as the market has declined, so has the price for herring. According to Fish and Game, over the last decade, it's fluctuated between $50 and $150 a ton. That makes it tough for the remote Togiak herring fishery to pencil out financially. The size of the commercial fleet in Togiak has shrunk as well. It used to comprise hundreds of vessels. But last year, no gillnetters fished, and just 8 purse seine vessels participated, hauling in less than a quarter of the available harvest. Togiak herring, meanwhile, are doing just fine. This spring's herring biomass is forecast to be over 300,000 tons, far above average. The department says that large forecast is mainly due to the survival of 2 age classes of herring. Most of the mature herring this year will be 6- and 7-year-old fish. Water temperatures in the southeastern Bering Sea and at the spawning grounds near Togiak influence when the herring spawn, and the department staff will still survey the biomass this spring. They use sea surface temperature models near Unalaska to predict the run timing. They also track the Bering Sea's ice coverage in February and March. This year, herring are expected to start spawning around Togiak on April 29th. While no commercial fishermen will be harvesting Togiak herring this spring, that doesn't affect the Dutch Harbor food and bait fishery to the south, which is allocated about 4,000 tons. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
The state of Alaska has hired a new leader for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Craig Tornga has been hired as the ferry system's new marine director. In that role, he'll oversee hundreds of ferry workers and a fleet of 9 ships. The marine director position, formerly known as the AMHS General Manager, has been vacant since the retirement of Captain John Falvey in January. According to the State Department of Transportation, Tornga has extensive experience in the marine industry and management. He started his maritime career sailing aboard ocean-going vessels with Crowley Marine Services, which transports fuel and supplies in Alaska. He spent more than 20 years working his way up through that company. Since 2017, Tornga has served as a senior vice president with Kirby Offshore Marine in Houston, Texas. The company distributes petroleum products with a fleet of offshore tugs and barges. The state worked with the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board on the hire, which unanimously supported Torga. Board Chair Shirley Marcourt said that the board is confident that Torga's decades of experience and knowledge in the unique marine industry here in Alaska and Houston span every element needed to manage the ferry system. Torga will take over a ferry system facing numerous challenges, from short staffing to an aging fleet. Torga's first day on the job will be Monday, April 3rd. A few state departments have agreed to continue a program that will allow more law enforcement on state ferries this summer. The Alaska Marine Highway System and the State Department of Public Safety announced the renewal of its ride-along agreement for Alaska State Troopers. The program allows troopers to ride for free on personal trips, if space allows, in exchange for law enforcement presence. Shanna McCarthy is a spokesperson for the State Department of Transportation.
So the purpose really is to increase the presence of Alaska State Troopers on the ferry, just to provide the public with some additional safety and security.
McCarthy says eligible troopers can ride along on a space available basis for personal travel and exchange for assisting crew and passengers as needed. McCarthy cited recent federal drug trafficking arrests on a ferry in Ketchikan as a type of incident troopers could assist in.
It's more of the case that the Marine Highway System, you know, doesn't have a security force per se. They have the crew, and it does give both passengers and crew that extra level of security when we do have, you know, law enforcement officers on board.
The ride-along program does not cost the state, as it's only as space is available. Troopers can call and reserve seating under the program. Families are not eligible. The Alaska Marine Highway System started up the Trooper Ride-Along program last year after it lapsed during the COVID pandemic. It originally started in 2008. San Francisco performer Sam Faustin has made a name for himself in Sitka as a sellout tribute performer, singing the works of Queen, Van Halen, and most recently, David Bowie. He's also taught at Sitka Fine Arts Camp and performed in a handful of musicals here, including the 2021 production of Little Shop of Horrors. Last month, he added middle school music teacher to his resume. KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports.
From watching him strut the stage of Sitka's Performing Arts Center as Freddie Mercury or Eddie Van Halen, you wouldn't guess that Sam Faustin spends most of his days singing classical music with the San Francisco Symphony. You also probably wouldn't guess that he'd be teaching David Bowie harmonies to middle schoolers, but Faustin thrives on variety. On this Friday at 8:30 a.m., Faustin is standing in front of about 20 middle schoolers in the Blatchley Music Room. The students still look a little bleary-eyed, but Faustin is ready to sing.
Good. A little bit higher. I know it's early, but if my voice changes,
why? For Faustin, singing has been a lifeline since he was younger than the students he's working with now.
As a choir boy, I was bullied quite a bit. And I found my own. I became the head boy of the choir, and I had a presence in that community and some amount of respect from my peers. But within like my own grade, I was, you know, a bit of the outcast. And
Faustin has taken on his new role of teacher and vocal coach for 2 weeks through an artist residency program. The Sitka Fine Arts Camp has been supporting a version of the program since 2005. In its current form, the grant pairs professional artists with school districts and provides funding for the artist to work for 2 weeks. The first week of Faustin's residency lined up with Blatchley Middle School's Discover Your Potential Week, where students not enrolled in choir could sign up for a week-long workshop. The students are learning David Bowie's Changes, one of Faustin's favorites. He's encouraging the students to use their voices both literally and figuratively.
What is the most why do we sing? Why do we sing?
Singing Alice. Expresses the stuff that words can't.
Good. Okay, somebody else in their own words. One more person. Why do we sing? Yes, Charlie.
Singing is such a personal reflection of one's artistic voice. In fact, we use the word voice to describe our ability to represent ourselves. And I think COVID has an effect, especially on kids who are in middle school these days, of really kind of subduing their identity and it just making them more tentative about self-expression in general. And I think singing is a way to really unlock some of those hesitations.
Getting the students to feel comfortable singing is his top priority.
So I got to get them pumped and I got to get them comfortable. And so I have to be pretty careful about how I lead the classes in terms of it's really important not to put students on the spot and feel like they have to sing in front of lots of people. That's the easy way to kill any sort of interest is by potentially embarrassing somebody. But at the same time, you want to encourage people to, when they're ready, open up and be able to be brave and make that step forward.
For Faustine, playing a variety of roles has helped him to maintain balance.
I have a relatively serious ADHD, and my ability, I don't want to say ability, but my privilege of being able to do lots of kinds of things really enables my ability to be a professional performer. Mm-hmm. So if I was only doing Freddie Mercury, I think I would, I don't want to say lose interest, but I think I would lose focus. So it's really special to me to be able to tell lots of different stories from lots of different perspectives.
Faustine picked Changes because the theme of confronting a changing world head-on seemed especially relevant for middle schoolers discovering their potential.
The second verse, I'll just read the lyrics right now. It's, I watch the ripples change their size, but never leave the stream of warm impermanence. I watch the years float through my eyes, but the years seem the same, and the children that you spit on as they try to change. It coupled so nicely with the mission of the DYP and of my residency. So I couldn't resist working on that song with the DYP kids. And oh my goodness, what a joy it's been to watch them get passionate about David Bowie.
Faustine hopes to return to Sitka for more musical endeavors.
Sitka has kind of become, and Juno, my rock and roll outlet, which is, I just can't articulate how special that is to me. I just love doing this.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George in Anchorage, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Greg Knight in Nome, Sean McDermott and Corinne Smith in Homer, Catherine Rose and Meredith Reddick in Sitka, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.